Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patrone. Another exciting week. In fact, these weeks, so many things are happening every 7 days or during those 7 days. More so, it seems, in recent weeks than before. I do not have enough time to cover all the things that happened that I would like to discuss with you. I'm seriously considering going to an hour for this show. I'm fighting it, though. It takes a lot of time to prepare for these things. But it's been that kind of a week again, and the issues keep popping up. I want to start this week with a story involving Jewish background, best way to put it. This is Hanukkah, and it's a time for many things, and one of the things is we should remember about the Holocaust. I want to talk about Helen Sperling. She was a Holocaust survivor. It just so happens that Helen Sperling, Holocaust survivor, is the title of this week's Conk Life column, and it publishes tomorrow at 5 o'clock in the evening. It will be available out on the streets. Helen Sperling was 95 years old. She died last week. She died in Utica, New York. She's lived for many, many years in my hometown, Utica. I met her only briefly once, but a very dear friend of mine knew her extremely well. The story I've written is her story about the Holocaust and the rest of her life following the years, the many years following the Holocaust. She was a college student, home on vacation in Poland at the time Germany invaded Poland. She heard the Germans coming. The whole family did. She remembers. She has a clear recollection of the boots, boom, 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 and then seeing these ugly black boots, as she puts it. They stormed into her house. Her family was affluent. Her father was an architect. They lived just outside of Warsaw. Her father had designed their home. She was a middle-class or upper middle-class young lady, and her family were upper middle-class. The Germans immediately went through the house, going through the cupboards, the dressers, anything, and throwing things out on the floor. All of a sudden, one of the Germans sat in her father's chair, stuck his boot up, his foot up in her mother's face, and said, "Shine these." And he threw at her one of her fine linens that they had taken out of one of the drawers. Well, she helped her mother shine those boots that day, and they were taken from their home. They, the family, were taken from the home that day. And that began, in her own words, 6 years of helplessness, humiliation, and degradation. 6 years. She was first taken to a ghetto, then to Ravensbrück, and finally to Buchenwald. She recalls distinctly and describes in her story, and I'm only giving you a few highlights, the sorting that took place at Buchenwald. They came out of the cattle cars, and when she came out of the cattle cars with her family, there was an officer, and he would direct people to this line or that line. One was for those who were going to be put to death. The other was for the living. Her parents went into the line, the death line. She, because she was young and strong, was put into the living line, okay? She spent the rest of her time in Buchenwald working in a munitions factory, fortunately, though that did not mean that she was not abused, et cetera, et cetera. When she was liberated in April 1945, she spent the next 3 years in a hospital being treated for kidney cancer, pneumonia, and malnutrition. She weighed only 60 pounds when she was liberated. And because of many reasons, she could no longer bear children. She had not had any. She was a college girl. And when she got out of Buchenwald, she was unable to bear children. She eventually got to the United States, met Leon, another Holocaust survivor, though she didn't know him from before, and they married. And eventually they found their way to Utica, adopted two children, and spent their lives basically in Utica for many, 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 many years. 35 of those years were spent by Helen speaking 3 times a week. every week for three times a week. She spoke religiously for 35 years all over the Northeast United States at colleges, universities, public and private high schools, police academies, monasteries, churches. She talked about the fact that genocide was ongoing. It had not ended with the Holocaust. It had not ended with the 6 million Jews who were exterminated. And she felt that people were not doing anything about the genocide. That, you know, the Holocaust was supposed to be the last one, but people seem to have forgotten. And there were genocides all over the world, Africa, Europe. And nobody really was getting excited. The United States, we talked the good talk, but we didn't walk the walk. And she was concerned because she said the most important thing was not to forget what happened to them, to the Jewish people, during World War II. She said there was an 11th commandment, and it was, thou shalt not be a bystander. Thou shalt not be a bystander. And when something like this genocide occurs, you have an obligation to speak up, to yell, to point it out, and to do something about it. Her quotes, she had many quotations. I mean, after 35 years, every word she said turned into, was involved in a quotation. I just want to share a few with you. I think they have an impact unto themselves. Like, 99% of survival was sheer luck. 99% of survival was sheer luck. I don't believe it happened. I don't believe it happened. The memory never stops hurting. The memory never stops hurting. And this is, I think, is very touching. The days are mine, but the nights still belong to Hitler. This she said many, many years after she was out of Buchenwald. The days are mine, but the nights still belong to Hitler. Get a copy of my article in Conquer Life. Read it. You will enjoy it. If you don't live in the Florida Keys area, it is available on my Key West Lou website. Upper left-hand column, the upper bar, second item in Conquer Life column. Click, and you got it. Okay, I want to go to wealth in the United States. New study. We have studies all the time about inequality of wealth in the United States. This one indicates that America's 20 wealthiest people, the 20th wealthiest people in our country, own more wealth than the bottom half of the American population. The top 20 people, top 20 wealthiest people, own more wealth in this country than the bottom half of the American population. Let's make it even more distinct, more clear. There are about 304 million people in the United States. That means the bottom half is 152 million people, which translates again that the 20 wealthiest people in the United States have more wealth than the combined income, or the combined wealth of the bottom 152 million people in this country. Something has to be done to it. We're not all going to be wealthy, but we've got to bring back the middle class. This was the greatest thing that could be, this was the only great thing that came out of World War II. We had a middle class. Everything worked towards the development of a middle class, and it gave everyone pride. You need a strong middle class. We've lost the middle class. It doesn't exist the last 30 years. What's happened, people don't make any more money today than they did 20 years ago when you take into account inflation. Yet the wealthy in this country have gone from millions to billions. They've become billionaires. People in this country in the top 1%, for example, have yearly bonuses in excess of $100 million from their companies. But yet, the 99% don't sit at the table and participate, don't eat. Now we're going to go to France. Vive la France. They had an election this past week, and this election could be telling as regards an election that's going to occur next year in the United States. I don't know, but there are comparisons. Here's what happened. This was a regional election. Their format is, they have a regional election. That means county officers, city, town, village officers, school board officers, this past Sunday. And it takes 2 weekends to have the election. It's going to take place again this Sunday. Well, so far, out of last Sunday, the result was unprecedented, shocking. How do I put this this way? The party who really has never amounted to anything in France, a far-right party called the Far-Right National Front Party, came in first. They took in 30-plus percent of the votes. Now, why did this happen? Well, the economy sucks in France like it sucks here. I don't care. You know, Obama has made the economy better. We're in a better position today, 7 years post his election, than we were 7 years ago. But it hasn't benefited the 99%. I don't care we have 5% unemployment. That don't mean diddly dip, because there's another 15% on top of that who aren't even concerned or considered because they fell off the unemployment rolls. We've really got about a 20% unemployment rate in this country. And our people that are working, you know, that made $35,000, $45,000, $50,000 a year are working at McDonald's now for those kind of wages. And that's why that happened. And people are also upset. This election came just days after the terrorist killings in Paris. So terrorism's on the table, as well as the poor economy. Now, there normally are two main parties in France. President Hollande's Socialist Party, they took in 22.3% of the vote. Former President Sarkozy's party, 26.4%. But the far-right National Front Party, 30.8%. The head of the party is a woman, Marine Le Pen. Here's what she stands for, okay? Calls for the eradication of Muslims. Demands that France rearm itself. She is anti-immigration. She is an anti-Semite. She doesn't believe in the Holocaust. She believes the Nazi gas chambers were merely a detail in history. There are 13 regions. France is broken down into 13 different election regions. Her group, Le Pen's group, the far right, have never won an election in just one region. It is anticipated by the experts that they may win 6 of the 13 regions after this coming Sunday. The national election is 16 months from now, next year, just like ours is, okay? And it is believed in France that these elections today are a barometer for tomorrow for the French national elections. Isn't this what I've been talking about, similar to Trump's success in the United States? He may not be an anti-Semite and things like that, but boy, he stands for a lot of things that this woman stands for. Why is Trump successful? Well, people are pissed off in the United States, the only way to put it. Our government is unreliable, does not seem to be functioning for the people. The wages are low, et cetera, et cetera. And could it be, I just throw this out there, could it be that what is happening in France and what is happening in the United States at this time with regard to Trump's popularity could be the beginning of a worldwide trend? Speaking of Donald Trump, I want to give you a brief update on the man. He's all over the news, so you really don't need it from me, but there are a couple of things that are worthy of pointing out that you may be unaware of. We know that he wants to ban Muslim travel to the United States. Keep them out of the United States. Well, one item I would like to bring to your attention. The mayor of St. Petersburg, Rick Chrisimus, he said yesterday, I ban Trump from St. Petersburg. Isn't that amazing? Trump's going to ban the Muslims from coming into the country. Trump is not welcome in St. Petersburg. I ban him. And all I got to say is what goes around comes around. This is a small example, but what goes around comes around. This morning on Morning Joe, I watch Morning Joe every morning religiously, 6 o'clock. Trump was on. He came on after a half hour of the show. He comes on the telephone all the time. He never appears on TV. He calls from his office or his home there. He doesn't have to be like other candidates, get dressed up, shave, and go before the TV camera. He does it his way on the telephone. Anyhow, I'm not a great fan of Joe Scarborough. I watch his show. I think the show overall is interesting. I don't think the man is a heavyweight. He doesn't seem to believe that what is, which is. He doesn't see that which is. The blind cannot see. It applies to him. I remember when I first talked and wrote about Shahriye a lot 4 years ago, he was on television saying, never happened here. Nobody would do it. Our courts would keep it out. At the very time, the two courts had already, in two different states, had already started using Sharia law, and it's being used in many more courts today. Anyhow, Mika's questioning Trump. Joe's trying to, and he is not responding. Trump is not responding to the questions. He's just rambling on and on. Whatever they asked him, he avoided the question, just talked and talked. You know, he talks, I did this, and I got the most votes here, and you should have seen this last night. Oh, my God, thousands of people outside. And he just kept going on this way. And, yes, we've got to keep the Muslims out, got to do something, blah, blah, blah. But he didn't stop to take questions and answer them. Finally, Joe said, stop, Donald. You're here to answer questions. We ask questions, you answer. You can't just keep talking. And they got into a little back and forth. Joe got pissed off. Trump got pissed off. Joe said, I'm going to break. I'm going to cut you off if you keep this up. And, you know, Trump said, break it, break off. And Joe took his finger. God bless him. He did something good for once. And he cut. They knocked Trump right out. 3 minutes of advertising. Then Trump came back on. I was surprised. And when he came back on, he was meek and he was humble and he did it properly. They asked questions and he answered. He didn't ramble. He didn't shout. It was a normal interview. I really would like to know what went on in those 3 minutes when we were not, you know, privy to the conversation between Scarborough, probably, and Trump. They had to come to some sort of an agreement that they would permit Trump back on, and he promised to answer the questions, but he also had to get a promise out of Scarborough and the other staff of Good Morning Joe to the effect that no mention would be made of what just happened, that Scarborough cut him off the air, because that wouldn't look good for Trump, would it? And they didn't. They just started as if they'd just taken a break for, you know, to advertise, and Trump looked normal after that. I'm just bringing to your attention, and I really would like to know, and I wish somebody would start asking questions of Joe and Mika, what happened during that break? How did you come around to bringing Trump back on your terms? Well, Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security, the Inspector General, every department has an Inspector General, the Inspector General did an investigation of certain areas of Homeland Security. And he came up with, this was a study done in August, and he came up with two interesting findings, very significant. One was that 72 of the employees of the Department of Homeland Security were on the terrorist watch list. You know, that you can't come into the country. They got to watch it when you fly airplanes. The terrorist watch list. 72 employees of the Department of Homeland Security. The other thing is, 8 major airports were checked. The screening process was checked at those 8 airports. They found a 95% failure rate. In other words, guns were, you know, we all went go through the security. And guns were gotten through, especially ankle guns got through security with no problem, and other type weapons. Now, how does this happen? I mean, I can recall once I went through, you know, those machines you're standing on, they swivel around you, they can see into your bones and everything. I had one tissue, balled in my pocket. And they said, what do you got in your pocket? It was a balled tissue, one sheet. And they picked it up. They can't pick up a gun on a guy's ankle and other weapons on a person's body. Our people we pay to protect us, the people at the airports, aren't doing their job. They are not adequately trained. No one watches over them, or they're just plain lazy and they don't care. They're no different than the Secret Service that is screwing up. Why does everyone on the government payroll, or many people on the government payroll, in sensitive positions today, screw up? They don't do their jobs properly. And that's what I have to say about the Department of Homeland Security. Well, when I was in law school, freshman year, constitutional law, Professor William Lloyd tough professor. You have no idea. He was the hangman. Almost half of our class were flunked out at the end of the first semester. That's the way it was then. Today, everyone graduates. Back then, they cut you right away. They cut half the class out the first year. And he was the guy who did it. He was the hatchet man. And one of his sayings was, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Well, not bad. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I am talking now about drug testing. Many employers have mandatory drug testing to get the job, and then they have at random mandatory drug testing during employment. It's become almost commonplace in the United States. Even public employees, civil servants, have to do drug tests, and some of them have cigarette testing now, when they get the job, after they're on the job, and alcohol testing. Well, what about policemen? I'm asking about policemen. Policemen are employees also, aren't they? They work for the government, some department of government. Policemen are employees. In Pittsburgh, they're having a war right now because Pittsburgh said, our police officers from now on are going to have mandatory testing for drugs and alcohol. Mandatory testing for drugs and alcohol. Well, the PBA said, no way, Jose, you're not going to do this to us. And they filed a civil rights grievance against the city. They said, the policeman said, everyone else gets tested, mind you. The policeman said, this violates our constitutional rights. This violates due process, bodily integrity. We have a right to privacy, okay? And you, the cop said, you to the city do not have the right to take away from us any personal rights such as this. Well, I got to tell you something. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Professor Lloyd was correct. If everyone else has to be drug tested or alcohol tested or drug tested and alcohol tested, why not policemen? Especially since they are involved in so many crazy things today, so many shootings and so forth. I say this to the policemen of Pittsburgh and hopefully to the policemen of the United States. Welcome to the real world. Which now brings me to a policeman story. There's a police officer. He is in Waverly, Ohio. His name is Deputy Sheriff Joel Jenkins. Earlier this year, he shot a man and he killed him. He was suspended administratively with pay while this matter was investigated. He shot this guy on duty. And it came back that the shooting was justified, the homicide was justified. Now he's back to work, Deputy Jenkins. Well, he's 26 years old. He's back to work. Last Thursday, he's in his home. He's off duty. He's drunk. He's home. He's drunk. Off duty. He has a pistol at home. It's not official carry. It's his pistol, a personal pistol. It has nothing to do with the job. He's got his neighbor there, Jason Brady. And somehow he shot his neighbor, Jason Brady, in the head and killed him. Well, Jenkins said, I was just showing my neighbor the gun. Jenkins has been arrested. They brought in a special prosecutor this time because with this guy they got a double header, second shooting in a year. And he's been charged with the felony of involuntary manslaughter. And the special prosecutor said, Jenkins had a gun. It was not an official pistol. He was drunk, so the charge is proper. And that's the story of Deputy Sheriff Joel Jenkins. I'll let you know what happens when it happens. I'm going to start another police story here. Police story. Please, well, let's see how we're doing on time here. This is disgusting. The place is the Detroit East English Village High School, East English Village High School in Detroit. The teenager is Dominique Radu. And this happened, by the way, back in December of 2013. It just broke in the news, however. The kids were playing after high school. They were throwing snowballs at each other. It was a snowball war. I mean, I grew up in the snow country in upstate New York. We all had snowball fights. Every day you threw snowballs at people. There were two police officers sitting in a police car. Somehow, not intentionally, a snowball was thrown and hit the window of the police car. No problem, except the window broke. What are you going to do? The window broke. Well, the police officers did not know who threw the snowball, but there were security cameras around the school. So they looked at the security cameras, and they said, there he is. There's the guy that threw the snowball. We can see him on the cameras, on the video. Dominique. And they went to Dominique's house and arrested him for the crime. They went into his house, walked in, handcuffed him, and took him out, and took him to jail. They called this a crime. The judge who appeared before set a $2,000 bond. These are poor people. Dominique is a kid. His parents are poor. They did not have the money to post a $2,000 bond. So Dominique sat in jail for 40 days. He sat in jail through Christmas and New Year's while awaiting trial. He finally came to trial 40 days after he had been arrested. It was a bench trial. That means no jury. His lawyer, Dominique's lawyer, must have thought he had a better shot at this thing by trying it without a jury. The policeman testified they saw Dominique on the video. Well, they played the video in court. Guess what? The police officers could not pick Dominique out on the video. They couldn't even see him on the video. And so, no other proof being offered, the judge dismissed the case. Now, I've got a couple of questions here. Why do you arrest somebody for throwing a snowball? With all the crime going on in this world, it's serious. This is bullshit. It broke a window. Take the kid home. You know who he is. Tell his father. Let his father deal with him. You scare the shit out of him. You holler at him at the scene. But you don't arrest somebody for throwing a snowball, even if it breaks a window. I broke windows with snowballs. I broke windows with baseballs. I broke windows by just slamming a door too hard to shut it at someone else's home. No one arrested me. If I was reported, it was to my father, and my father dealt with me appropriately. But these things happen. They're not a big deal. And the other thing is, keep in mind that these two police officers deceived the court. They lied to the court because in the paperwork that formed the basis for Dominique's arrest, they said, I can identify Dominique in the video. And when it came to trial, it turned out they could not. Which proves policemen in this country are out of control. We know that. They're out of control. I blame the judge, too. There was a time a judge would never let this happen. He would know there's a kid, he's got a $2,000 bond, and somebody, someplace in the court system would make him aware the kid's parents can't pay it. He would never let that kid stay in jail 40 days awaiting trial for this kind of a charge. But judges today work with the cops. The cops work with the prosecutors. Everybody works with each other. In the judicial system, it's kumbaya. No one's going to offend anybody. And in the meantime, the people are all sworn to protect. Some of them get screwed, as Dominique did. Well, one other thing here. Airplane. Lufthansa, flying from Frankfurt to Belgrade. This happened recently. A Jordanian man with a United States passport, on a plane with over 100 passengers, tried to open the door to the plane, shouting as he's trying to open the door, I wish to join Allah, and I want all my fellow passengers to join Allah with me. He was fortunately overpowered. Nothing happened. The plane landed safely. Who the hell wants to join Allah with this guy? These people are crazy. Anyhow, that's the show for this week. I hope you have enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed the topic selection. I try to bring to your attention some things that you may not be aware of. This show is archived. As you well know, many of you listen to it in the archived version. Most of you do on Black Talk Radio, YouTube, and it's also linked, to my Key West Lou website. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. The material in the book is like the material on this show. If you like the show, please buy my book. Amazon.com, The World Upside Down. If you don't like this show, don't buy the book. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to being with you again next week.